This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey everybody, Pete Caliendo. For some of you, you can see me on YouTube. For others, you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box podcast. We are here in our Chicago offices. Yes, we are hunkered down. Yes, we are following the rules of the coronavirus. That's the best way to combat this. Listen to your government. Listen to your medical officials. Listen to your state, local officials. They are working hard to get this thing under control. Trust me, I've been through several things, critical things throughout my many years. I'm not going to tell you how many years because I'm going to tell you my age. You're going to have to guess that one. But I've been through a lot of them. And unfortunately, when you've been through them, you're a little bit more used to the pressure. Still a little pressure. Yes, don't like being home all the time. But it's what we got to do to make things better. And one more message I want to give to all our young people in the U.S. and around the world, follow the rules. This is not, you know, this is something that can affect you, but on top of it, you're going to affect others. So stay in, relax, play video games, do whatever you need to do, get educated, do a bunch of stuff at home. Things will get better and we will all be great. And guess what? Baseball Outside the Box still continuing and we are rocking and rolling. Starting live on YouTube. And again, your host, Pete Caliendo. We got a great guest coming from an area that was heavily hit by the coronavirus. That is New Rochelle. He's going to tell us a little bit about it. My good friend, Darren Gurney, let me tell you just a little bit about him. He's the baseball coach, currently NCAA coach at Lehman College. He's the founder of, and we're going to talk to him about this, the director of Rising Star Baseball Camp. That's going to be interesting to talk about. For the past 28 years, NCAA coach and high school coach, lots of experience. He's had 20 players who have been in the draft. He's the author of Covering All the Bases, 101 Defensive Baseball Drills, Baseball Smarts, and Heads Up. Gotta love the baseball smarts. I need that one. Full disclosure, he is a Caliendo Sports. There you go, Baseball Smarts. And we're going to put all that on the show notes, Mr. Gurney. And full disclosure, he is also a Caliendo Sports instructor, coach, teacher, mentor that goes around the world with some of our teams. Awesome. We love having them. The people and players respond to him so well. So let me welcome my good friend, Darren Gurney. What's up, buddy?
Hey, good afternoon, Pete. Thanks for having me, and I hope everything's good out there in the Chicago area.
Excellent, excellent. And I love your baseball office down there. We all got these. I got my little studio here. You got yours. We're rocking and rolling. You got your USA hat on, ready to go.
Yeah, well, that's my team. America hat, you know, and it's been great coaching for your organization over the years, being in Japan and Dominican and obviously Italy last year, and hopefully we're headed to Cuba this August. So that's been a great experience for me.
And I appreciate it. Hey, listen, since you brought that up, just a little quick thing, I want you to tell the folks in the U.S., especially in the U.S., because most of our players come from the U.S., but we've had players from all over the world that have joined some of our U.S. teams that travel, or Caliendo Sports teams that travel internationally. Tell them a little bit about the experience, why it's a good experience for young people to go internationally and maybe do something different instead of doing things always in the U.S. constantly.
Yeah, Pete, I think it's hard for some people to see the value in an international experience because they're so fixated on, I want to get myself ready for college baseball. I want to get recruited. I want to play on this travel team or that travel team. And frankly, for parents, it's very expensive to do all that stuff. But what makes Team America and the Caliendo Sports experience so amazing is you get to train and play against players from all over the world. Our coaching staff that Coach Caliendo has put together are people that played at the pro level and coached at very high levels as well. And we really get into the nitty-gritty, the finer details, the minutiae of baseball. And the feedback I've gotten from my players that I've been training for years is there's nothing like it, and it's a lifelong memory and experience.
Hey, folks, for everybody around the world, be safe. We're praying for you. We're hoping everything clears up. But especially for my Italian friends and relatives. Hey, I came down here with my Italian coffee. I've got my Italian espresso. I've even got my Italian espresso cutter up, get my espresso done, and my cookies from Italy. I got them all. And I know, Darren, you've been to Italy, you know, great country, great people. I know they're going through struggling right now a little bit, but they've done the right thing. It sounds like they shut everything down, let the thing die, and hopefully everything will be good for them.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the countries with the best curves, they shut down early, whether it be South Korea or Singapore. And those are Asian nations where I think discipline and a lack of freedom, the citizens are more accustomed to that. When you look at countries like Italy and other ones where the curve is steeper, and even the United States, we probably didn't lock down soon enough. Now, certainly in my area with Governor Cuomo, we're definitely making more of an effort to really shut people down. You hope that, as you mentioned, young people follow these guidelines and actually stay in and don't try to live their normal lives.
And by the way, the Italian coffee espresso was for you, too. You know, I mean, you spent a little time in Italy. We had a good time there. Hey, since we hit that area, let's start off. I think it'd be a great time to start off at this time, especially because I'm hoping a lot of players see this on YouTube. But talk to our audience about, with your players, when this hit and not obviously you had to shut everything down, what did you do? Did you have a talk with them? Were you able to email them? What did you say to them? You know, because, you know, they're going to be confused. They don't know when it's going to start up. What should I be doing? You know, obviously, I don't want to shut down completely. We'll get into some of the in-house training they can do possibly at home. But let's talk about what you talked to the players about.
Yeah, so the NCAA baseball hit us hard. My alma mater, Washington University, actually first time ever we were ranked number one in the country, undefeated. And now those guys are not going to have an opportunity to have their national championship run. Where I coached Lehman College, we were actually away in South Carolina on our spring training trip. And we were coming back on the bus, 12-hour bus ride. And we started hearing little inklings about, you know, possible shutdowns of March Madness and other conference tournaments. And then literally, I would say, 30 hours after we got back from South Carolina, NCAA canceled our season. The good news is they've given a blanket waiver. They announced that, I want to say on Saturday, they sent us emails that they're going to give a blanket waiver to any players that they have another year of eligibility. Certainly, if you're a 2020 MLB draft candidate, that's got major ramifications. Mm-hmm. But imagine you're a junior or senior, Peter, and you're hoping to get drafted in June in the MLB draft, and now all of a sudden you lost, you know, your senior or junior year where you're going to show people what you can do. You're a pitcher. You've ramped up your velocity from 88 to now 94 miles an hour. You thought you were going to move up in the draft to maybe first, second round, whatever it might be, and now all of a sudden your season's canceled. Mm-hmm. Or imagine a high school kid who's a senior, and he's going to get drafted, and now all of a sudden no one gets to watch him. Now, maybe they were watching him in summer travel games and in the fall, but not the same as being able to see you in May and June of your high school season.
And a lot of the high school kids, what can they be doing? You know, well, actually, you have, and we're going to talk about it because I want to mention your academy, an interesting name and why the name and all the experience you have behind it. But you've got younger players, too, in your academy. So a combination of your high school, your younger players, you know, What have you told them, and what can they work on? What can they be doing? Because you don't want to sit, you know, this could go on for a couple months possibly, and, you know, you don't want to sit around doing nothing all day. I know I don't do nothing all day. I do stuff at home. So just kind of mention that.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Peter. I think we got to start with the basics, even for non-baseball players. I mean, we have childhood obesity in this country, and this shutdown, does that mean kids are going to just sit on the couch and watch TV and play video games? No, I think it's important that parents keep them on a schedule. Most of them are getting academic things emailed to them or done through video conferencing. So it's important to stay on a schedule. I would get your child up in the morning early, like a normal school day. I would feed them breakfast. I would have them do a couple hours of academics. Then I might do some exercise, do some lunch, do a little more academics, and then try to finish the day going outside. Obviously, we're contained. Dr. Sanjay Gupta said no play dates, so that means we're not going to necessarily play basketball, play soccer, play baseball with our friends, but that doesn't mean we can't do some independent baseball activities. And let's go over some of that. So I think a lot of this generation, Peter, has been used to going to facilities where they're trained by coaches. And even their parents are a little out of touch maybe with coaching them because the trainer coaches them for 45 minutes to an hour for X number of dollars, or they're on a travel team where they get coached. and now players are going to have to train on their own. So what are some things they can do? Number one, they can do some academic baseball things. I mean, shameless plug, baseball smarts.
There you go.
But aside from baseball books, obviously, there's DVDs and videos. I know many people go on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube to learn about how to practice baseball. But some real basics. I could be by myself and work off a batting cage. I could be by myself and do mirror drills in a long mirror. Just yesterday, one of my college guys, he sent me photos from our South Carolina trip, and he paired them up with major leaguers from spring training games. And he was asking me, hey, coach, here are some screenshots of my delivery paired up with this or that major leaguer. What do you think? So if you're an intuitive kid that wants to be very, if you will, analytical about your mechanics, this is a great opportunity. Aside from batting tees, I mean, I would, as a kid, and I'm sure you did, Peter, I would just throw a ball off the wall and work on my glove skills.
Absolutely.
You know, flipping a ball up and down in the air and catching it while watching TV, if you're going to do some of that, work on your four-seam grip, you know, your two-seam grip, work on maybe your breaking pitch grips, your change-up grips. There's nothing wrong with doing those kinds of things. I'm a big advocate of throwing by yourself. Throw into a net. Get a soft toss net and have a parent or a sibling flip you balls. So we don't have to do this at a facility with a trained professional that's charging you $85 an hour. We can do a lot of work independently. And this will be a transition for a lot of players because they're used to having someone stand over and kind of hold their hand through this experience.
Yeah, the old days, I remember them, throw the ball against the wall. I mean, it depends on the basement you have. You could even throw balls in your basement if you got a wall. You know, you could work on backhand, forehand. You could work on all kinds of stuff that you would, just like if you were outdoors. You know, like you said, batting tees. I know with technology nowadays, you could use a batting tee, but you could also use several devices to look on your computer where you're hitting the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the technology has increased so much with baseball. I mean, we have a Diamond Kinetics ball that now shows our guys spin rates and velocities and angles. And for hitting, there's things like swing rails and other devices that really help players kind of show them where they need to be mechanically at point of contact and at point of release when pitching.
And coach, I know, and like every morning I get up, I get my routine, as you mentioned. Then I go walk my dog for an hour. So that's an hour exercise. I come in, do my sit-ups. I've got two heavy balls. I just do kind of like a throwing motion with two heavy balls in my hands, not because I'm playing, just because I want to stay strong.
Yeah.
You know, I've got medicine ball that I might bounce or rotate. I've got different things. So now players could also work on their conditioning, their flexibility.
Well, that was going to be my next point. I mean, outside of baseball, we have to stay physically fit. And we know that it's easy to get cabin fever. You're indoors all day, so it is important to go outside and get fresh air, keeping that 6-foot distance rule that the government has set as a guideline. But it's very important to get that fresh air and stay physically fit. So young people, you can do push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, dips, crunches, all sorts of wrist rolling things to keep basically head to toe in that kinetic chain in good shape, even though you're not out there maybe playing, you know, your normal 9-on-9 baseball game or 5-on-5 basketball game.
You know, and I got to remember, we're talking to people all over the world, all over the U.S. There's warmer areas. You can go outside against your garage. There's nobody there, so you're not going to get infected. Throw the ball against your garage outside. So there's things you can do in the outside, as you just mentioned. And, folks, I know before I start getting Twitter messages and all kinds of messages, I know I went to my nose, and I know I went to my face with my hand. So just want you to know I've been in the house 6 days. I got my hand lotion right here. See that? I've been doing this every day. Make sure. So sometimes, you know, it is a bad habit. And I did want to mention that, coach, because it's a bad habit of going to your face. I catch myself doing that. And I say this because I look at the positives, too. I think when we come out of all this, there's going to be a lot of positive things because society's going to have to do things that we're kind of not used to. You know, I didn't wash my hands every two hours, 4 hours. I didn't clean my hands the way I should have all the time. I admit it. You know, I should, before I eat, yeah, you should wash your hands. Well, sometimes I don't, unfortunately. That's life. You forget. And they know, so I think some things are going to give us, you know, get us back in some good habits.
I remember you didn't wash your hands before that nice feast we had in Rome.
Yeah, but, right.
But, you know, we were on our South Carolina spring training trip. Mid-trip, our athletic director emailed us about all these new social interactions. We're not supposed to shake hands after the games. the players were basically banging elbows and the coaches. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we don't do that handshake and hug or whatever it might have been. So I do think society-wide, we're going to have a whole new way of interacting. And there are going to be people fearful, but there's also going to just be a whole new norm, as we say, the new normal, the way people are going to interact with each other, both on and off the baseball field.
Hey, speaking about interacting, and I'm not sure if you know this. I was reading a paper today, this morning, at high school baseball and everything. I know there's certain rules. Obviously, we don't want players going to work with, together because of the social distancing. But Skype calls, are they allowed with players? I know schools are doing it. So, like, Skype calls to be able to talk to players, maybe show them what to do on a Skype conference or whatever, education-wise, that can continue to keep them motivated.
Oh, absolutely. That is all legal. I've been posting YouTube videos for my academic students, but I do a lot of with the Google Classroom with my baseball players. So, yeah, we interact a lot about mechanics and so forth over technology. Obviously, if there's an NCAA recruiting violation, at stake, that's where it gets a little dicey. But if it's not a recruiting situation, it's fair game to instruct over the internet with internet cams and video so forth.
Something very important, because our good friend Alan Yeager always talks about it on social media and all over. There's a shutdown, and one reason players need to continue is like you said, the conditioning part, but it's also the safety of the arm, not just for pitchers, but for everybody. You shut down for a month and don't do anything. Now, how long is it going to take? According to Alan, it's like 6 weeks to ramp back up to make sure you're getting into good throwing conditioning, pitching conditioning.
No, you bring up a great point. I'm actually a big proponent of Alan's six-week ramp-up program. We did that starting January 6th with my college pitchers. We were ready. My starters were able to go 70 pitches, 75 pitches opening day, and relievers were at the 40-pitch mark. So I'm a big proponent of that. They're actually talking about the MLB, which, as of now is starting maybe sometime in May. They're going to have to do a 2 to 3 week spring training session now, even though they already went through spring training. I was speaking with my dear friend Donovan Mitchell yesterday from the New York Mets, and he said it looks like a 2 to 3 week spring training that they're going to have to, restart. And as you said, the arm and other body parts are going to need to be ramped up. Otherwise, we're going to have muscle tears and so forth.
So what are some of the things at home that a player can do to make sure that that ramp up is a little bit faster? You mentioned the condition. Is there anything else that they can do to make sure that the ramp up is a little faster so that it doesn't take the 6 weeks?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the Oates throwing sock. It's something that Darian Seiler, one of our great coaching colleagues, put me onto.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you put your arm into a sock, but it's more substantial than your traditional sock you wear on your leg. And it enables you to wrap the arm, and then you can long toss in the confines of a six-foot area, but you're throwing the ball and releasing it in this Oates throwing sock.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of replaced the old towel drill, because it puts the baseball in your hand and it allows you to release the baseball.
And folks, the other thing I was going to mention, sorry to interrupt, but I was going to mention that I remember Tom House with his study with Southern California at the medical center talked about, why tennis players don't get hurt, or they don't get, major surgeries, they get tennis elbow, is because they're holding on to the racket when they hit a ball. They might hit 100 balls before a match. Well, we can't do that in baseball. And one of the reasons was because of holding the racket, you strengthen the backside, which is also your decelerator. So that's something I'm assuming that guys that can work on, to strengthen that backside and increase the deceleration aspect.
Well, that's actually why the Oates throwing sock was invented, was because of the whole deceleration and the harmful effects of doing the towel drill and other drills where you prematurely decelerate or don't decelerate properly. So that's one of the many reasons. But the Oates throwing sock enables you to long toss within the confines of a small area. I'm also a big fan of their tap connection ball, which really shows you that you want to get your arm at that 90 degree angle or as close to it as possible. All the research they showed looking at all-time great pitchers like Nolan Ryan and Steve Carlton and Tom Seaver, they're roughly 90 degrees. And that tap connection ball allow you to do that. And again, use the mirrors and clean up your mechanics so that when you do finally get outside and this ban and the shutdown lifts, we can actually have proper mechanics. And this might be a positive, Peter, by in small confines, we have to focus on those little mechanics. You can't just go out and play. And why not use this opportunity to really fine-tune our mechanics and to become a little bit of a baseball nerd, as Coach Seiler and I like to talk about.
You know, absolutely. Now guys are going to have to train indoors in small confines, create good habits, and that can continue for later on. Because, you know, how many times have coaches told players in the past, go home, look in the mirror, you know, go through your swing. I mean, and yet guys really didn't. I know I didn't take it that serious when I was a younger player. I wish I would have, because it would have made me better. So hopefully we're creating some good habits out of this.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad you mentioned swing. There are so many drills I can do dry without a ball. I mean, I can put a bat behind my back and do the old-fashioned hip drill where I'm working on my, you know, using my torso and my lower half. I can do a lot of dry drills in a mirror watching my mechanics. I can do a lot of knob-to-baseball drills. So there are things I can do without necessarily having someone throw live to me. I can do the fence drill where I measure up and swing, which is an anti-casting drill, which forces me to get the barrel through the zone without getting prematurely extended with that bottom arm. So there's a lot of things we can work on fundamentally without being on a 90-foot baseball field.
And we could do some of the things that, if, you know, sometimes becomes too easy and boring, we could add some things. We can sit on plyo balls, stand on plyo balls, or stand on something and swing opposite way. You can use heavyweight light bat. You can do different things to kind of break the monotony a little bit, but yet it also teaches your body how to kind of organize itself.
Well, it's funny. A lot of us in the Northeast, Peter, we've been doing that since early January.
Right. That's true.
You know, we finally got to play our games down on spring training, and now we're going to be going back indoors, mostly individually, to do a lot of those things.
That's tough.
It's fresh in my players' minds, right? We're doing med ball slams. We've been doing a lot of the BOSU ball training and doing balance drills, balance beam, time, balance point positions, and so forth, which now at least is fresh in their minds, and they can continue it and almost like, as we said earlier, do a second spring training now.
You know, if some of the coaches had some of the technology, which is some of it's very inexpensive, you know, the program where you put the knob at the bottom of the bat and you can determine, you could also make sure that your players are doing swings because your coach can see that on the internet.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right. There is so much technology. I mean, we've come so
Blast Motion comes to mind right away.
Blast Motion. I don't think many people probably have individual Rap Sotos or Hit Tracks at their homes.
No, unless you're a big league player.
Right. But I mean, you can buy an $80, $100 Diamond Kinetics ball, like you said, Blast Motion. So there are a lot of different technologies. And then you've got the video apps like Coach's Eye, and so forth, that enables people to videotape themselves and send it to a coach, even if you're not going to conference live.
Right. Folks, I just came, and, you know, this was about 6 days ago, right before I started my home quarantine. And I'm home quarantine not because I'm sick. I'm feeling great. I'm healthy. I'm strong. I'm home quarantine because I'm following the rules. That's what we're supposed to do. If we all follow the rules together, this thing will be over. So follow the rules, folks. I went to Visual Edge, which is a great program. I actually did it. It's here in Schaumburg, Illinois. Visual Edge is the vision training on the computer to be able to test six areas of your vision to make sure that they're correct and strengthen them. It was unbelievable. And then they have another program called Monsterful, which is the head. Now, I know Monsterful is more expensive. It's like $12,000, but it's you put the headset on and you see the visual reality. And I actually got the chance to, you know, being a big league stadium and get into the batter's box and pretend I'm a big league guy. And then I had Trevor Bauer throwing. They have like 1,400 Trevor Bauer balls. You could hear the ball coming. You could hear the noise. And then you have to call the pitch where it's at. And I'll tell you what, it is really good. So you can actually, I guess, I know I talked a lot, but you could actually do that kind of stuff if you have the ability, because even Visual Edge is not that much.
Now, Pete, were you hitting home runs over Wrigley fence against Trevor Bauer, or were you?
Yeah, they didn't have the Wrigley fence. I think they had Yankee Stadium, and I think I'm sad to say that I realize now why I couldn't hit. That's why I'm coaching.
You bring up a great point. There's so many things we can do visually, and obviously eye dominance testing and visual training has become a big part of the game, and there's no reason why players can't also focus on that during these, you know, difficult times of being stuck indoors.
Hey, the other thing we didn't bring up, and I know there's so much you can do, but is the Jaeger bands or any bands you have. I know I use that, the military one you hang on the wall, the straps. I can't remember the name of it, but there's so many things you can do at home.
Yeah, even if you don't have the Jaeger bands, I mean, you can use therapeutic bands that maybe one of your parents or siblings use when they're rehabbing an injury. And those are really good for internal and external rotation and the various different angles we can approach to get the rotator cuff as well as that UCL area on the elbow, the Tommy John injury area, you know, nice and stabilized.
Great stuff, man. Love it. So, folks, hope, you know, especially players, hope you got a lot out of this. Hey, listen, I want to get into your academy. Tell us how you named it and your background on the academy, and I'm going to get into some of the training you do there.
Yeah, so we started the academy 22 years ago. It's in New Rochelle, New York, as you mentioned, one of the epicenters for the coronavirus outbreak. And thankfully, with people like our mayor, Noam Bramson, and Governor Andrew Cuomo, we've done a good job, I think, of stabilizing that situation. So the camp started, as I mentioned, 22 years ago this July, and we train athletes ages 4 to 15, and I've been blessed to have a tremendous coaching staff over the years, guys who played, obviously, college ball, in some cases, professionals, and our coaching staff continues to really be cutting edge with a lot of the technology and the techniques we use. We've had 6 players go from our program onto the professional level, and we have right now, I think, 65 players playing college baseball who came through our camp. We have speed coaches and vision coaches, so we really like to break down the game in a very specialized manner for all age groups.
And the Rising Star, you know, where'd you get that from?
So, Pete, this is a funny story. I don't think I ever told you this on one of our international trips together. So,
it was. And you told a lot of stories, by the way.
Oh, well, that's my game, especially. Long bus rides. So, you know, riding from Rome to Venice is a serious bus ride. So when I first started the camp, I called it Babe Ruth Baseball Camp because a lot of the players were playing in the Babe Ruth League. Uh-huh. And I thought nothing better than to target their league, which was ages something like 12 to 14 or 13 to 15. And we were doing really well in our first 2 years. And then one day I came home and there was a FedEx envelope mailed to me, and it was from Babe Ruth's granddaughter, and she said, you have to cease and desist using Babe
wow.
Ruth's name, or we're gonna file a lawsuit. So sure enough, I had less than 30 days to really come up with a new name for the camp, and I ran a bunch of names by my friends and family, and Rising Star is what we come up with, and it's kind of stuck very well. Sure enough, since then, I believe there's a book written about Barack Obama called Rising Star. There was a TV show on ABC called Rising Star. So we've had a lot of stuff in the media that's kind of helped embolden the name. But it's really fitting because we've been fortunate to have so many kids come through with that passion and vision and rise to a very high level of being stars both at the high school, NCAA, and now major league level.
Very interesting. And the other thing is you have some Japanese connections, too.
Yeah, so I coached for 8 years at KU Academy, and those guys, unfortunately, their season's been shut down as well now, and they go on to play at KU University, and that's why when we took the Team America Caliendo trip to Japan, to Tokyo, it was so fun for me to interact with them. We met for dinner. They took me out to a really fun place, and they cooked that food right in front of you. I don't know if it was hibachi or something like that, and yeah, so I'm still in touch with a lot of those guys. You know, they're 13 hours difference. So when we speak, it's either really late here or really early here. But such passionate players. And as you know, the Japanese are so successful, especially at the youth level, because of the discipline and the selflessness and the approach of being willing to do anything to help the team.
Yeah, I got my Japanese book here. Got my Japanese souvenir book. I got Japanese stuff all over the place. As you know, I love Japan. I love the people. I love the country. And I love Japanese baseball. I got to tell you, as we're talking.
And Pete, let me interject. I dedicated my fourth book, Baseball Smarts, to the Japanese people. I don't know if you can see it on the screen
yeah.
there.
Oh, yeah.
That's me and first team All-State Shitaro Wakayama, who was such an incredible player for me. And now he's back in Japan. I think he's a scratch golfer now.
But wow.
What a talented player. And what a special relationship I've had with the Japanese team for 10 years.
And I got to tell you, you know, we talk about the Japanese players. They're the ones right now, I guarantee you, that have no problems training at home, have no problems doing things on their own. As a matter of fact, they're probably doing 10 times more than what you told them to do.
Yeah, not only that, you know, when they announce we're shutting down schools for a month, you know that they're actually going to abide by it, and they're not going to be going out and playing with their friends and interacting in the streets. The discipline there and the respect for authority is at a whole different level in America, and hopefully we can adopt some of those guidelines that they've been able to follow.
Hey, let's talk about some of that Japanese experience and some of the things you may have learned from Japanese baseball that we can teach to our coaches, players, and even our parents.
Yeah, so 1 through 9 in our batting order have to be able to bunt and can be called upon to bunt. I mean, we had our cleanup hitter last year or 2 years ago lay down a bases loaded squeeze bunt, Pete, to beat our rival Briarcliff at a nighttime stadium game. Bases loaded squeeze bunt with our cleanup hitter. And you know, when Yoichiro was given the sign, he didn't even flinch. I mean, whereas you give an American kid bases loaded bunt, probably going to like either miss the sign, shake his head, ask you to go through the signals again. And he pushed that bunt perfectly down the second base four hole. And I believe we got 2 RBIs on the play, because by the time they picked it up and threw it away, we had 2 runners in, I think, second and third. So my point is the selflessness. That's one piece. Secondly, when you teach a Japanese player a new fundamental, they will practice it and practice it even after practice ends. And I'll just tell you a couple stories about, you know, my experience with the Japanese. So my first year coaching at KO Academy, I had to stop practice because we weren't short tossing well. And I brought the guys in and I showed them and I said, hey, Ricky, you got to get your arm all the way back up to parallel if you're going to be able to throw it with any velocity underhand to the hitter. So we demonstrated, we went back to our drills, and practice ended. And when I showed up the next day, the athletic director, Mike Arias, called me in his office and said, Coach Gurney, I need to talk to you. And I go, what's up? I thought he wanted to talk about the schedule or maybe something with the busing. And he said, what happened with Ricky yesterday at practice? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the captains made him run 12 miles after practice. I said, 12 miles? He's like, what did you do? I said, oh, no, we just stopped practice to go over the fact that he wasn't front tossing well. So they take it so seriously. Last year I had a lefty pitcher, very talented, named Yuki, and Yuki wasn't getting on top of his curveball. So I said, Yuki, I want you to really focus on throwing the back of your hand at the catcher and getting your chest over your knee. And he looked me in the eyes, he took his hat off, and he said, yes, coach, I will fix that immediately. And he walked away by himself and started throwing dry curveballs and working on getting those chest over knee mechanics and really throwing the back of his hand at his target. So it really is remarkable. My first year there, Pete, I'll never forget, we were playing a 3-game series and the parents, a lot of them flew over from Tokyo. And one of the players, I was unable to get him in the game just because his skill set didn't match up. We were playing some tough opponents. And I remember getting on our bus, and his parents were waiting for me right by the bus door. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. And sure enough, I get to the bus and they bowed to me and gave me a nice bottle of sake.
Wow.
So here I was terrified that they were going to, you know, chew out for not getting their kid in to the game. And they bowed and gave me a bottle of sake. So very different approach than the Americans.
Hey, speaking of sake, a short commercial break for my Italians in Italy. I know you're in quarantine. Angelo, I got my Italian bottle of wine you gave me. I'm going to have that to drink. So a little toast to my Italian friends in Italy. Be safe. Hey, something I want to talk about was, you know, the Japanese or our society, I should say baseball in the U.S. Are we getting away from the fundamentals? Are we getting away, like in your college, are you working on bunting? Because, you know, we want to focus on all this different type of training, which I certainly understand. You know, we're talking about, you know, they use different terms. I always forget the terms, but I certainly understand it. Block training and then, you know, individual change-up training, whatever you want to call it. The Japanese are certainly block training, and they've shown they can be very successful block training. But I've also seen them do some different things. But are we getting away from the fundamentals, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I would say that the fundamentals are changing, and that's because it's a top-down approach. We start at the major league level where they're getting paid, just to use basics, to hit home runs and drive in runs. So they're looking at things like launch angle and exit velocity to maximize the potential. Why? That leads to money. It puts fans in the seats, and it gets players paid high salaries. So that's going to trickle down to college, high school, and then the youth level. And yes, therefore, are we getting away from bunting? Yes, people don't bunt at the major league level so much. Are we getting away from maybe teaching people to choke up with two strikes and put the ball in play, even if it's weakly to the right side to move a runner? I think we are getting away from that. And it becomes a challenge for, I think, high school and youth coaches to really emphasize that for a number of reasons. I mean, high school coaches and people need to empathize with their plight. Number one, they're competing with these travel coaches that tell the kids, hey, you're going to get a Division I scholarship. Just keep writing me that $3,000 check every 4 months or every 6 months. And then that guy becomes, you know, the soothsayer, and the high school coach suddenly doesn't know as much because he's not marketing himself. The other piece to that puzzle is there's the coach that's paying or getting paid to give the lessons at the facility. And he's telling the kid, yeah, you're a D1 kid, maybe a pro kid, because he wants to keep that money flowing. Again, the high school coach is a little bit, you know, getting his legs cut out from under him. So that's when also the high school coach comes in and says, by the way, we're going to bunt. We're going to choke up with two strikes on us. We're going to pitch to contact. And that doesn't always get reinforced by some of these travel programs and some of these individual coaches who are trying to groom kids for just their own level of playing at the college level and perhaps getting a scholarship. So I think the team concept is what I'm trying to say, Pete, is sometimes lost in all of this new type of training and travel baseball.
Yeah, and my concern a little bit is if we get away from some of the fundamentals, I'm even talking about training with the proper fundamentals of fielding, throwing, hitting, whatever it may be, you know, especially throwing and fielding. I mean, there's the possibility of some injuries occurring because, you know, if you're not training the fundamentals and you just keep playing games all the time and you don't go back to, you know, refining your skills, the body's going to start doing some things wrong too, because areas are going to get weaker. You're going to start throwing incorrectly. And that's my concern is, you know, we need to stick with, you know, if I had a travel team, and one good thing, I was listening to a very good travel program. I can't remember where it was at. They've changed their philosophy and they're reducing the number of games they're playing and they're actually increasing their training.
Well, that's good to hear, because you look at a lot of these travel teams, you know, they'll play a 40-game summer schedule, but they're only billed in 3 to 5 practices once the season starts. And as we know, it's really important to reinforce what you were doing preseason and to kind of review some of the things you did right and wrong in the games through practices. I mean, even when we were in Italy last year, you remember in that grueling schedule, we went to that stadium and had a really good comprehensive practice that week. Mm-hmm. You may remember that Italian coach tried to beat me in a sprint, and I had to show him up, and then he gave me that Italian Gatorade. You remember that Italian Gatorade we were drinking?
Yes, yes. I was hoping you weren't going to pop a hamstring.
Yeah, you and me both. So, so it's really important, that, like you said, to integrate practices into a very rigorous summer schedule or fall travel schedule, and I think that gets overlooked. Because people just want to play games and have nice gear and go to stadiums and all that stuff.
Yeah, and for all our listeners, I hate to keep reminding you, pounding the pavement on this. You know, we're lucky to be able to travel the world. Look, I've been to Cuba, I've been to Japan, I've been to Dominican Republic, Latin America a lot, and understand some great players come out of these countries. Also, they practice twice as much as they play games. Now, yes, they're fortunate because they can play maybe 80 games because of the weather, 90 games, but they practice twice as much. And it just goes to show that the practice helps refine your skills and make you better, keep you safer. Not to mention multi-sport athletes. You know, that's a whole nother conversation. And before I forget, Coach Gurney, check out Coach Gurney at Twitter, at Coach Gurney. G-U-R-N-E-Y. It'll be on the show notes. And you got a website, too, for your academy, right?
Yeah, that's www.risingstarcamp.com. And we've got some great resources on there and some videos that you guys can learn from. So check us out. And love to have you guys start playing baseball with us in New Rochelle, New York.
All right. And we'll put that on the show notes. So, again, you know, a lot of these countries, you know, the other countries, you take the Cubans. A great example of the Cubans, I'll give you a quick one here. I just did a tour there where we train coaches all over Cuba. And one of the things I found out was that for 20 years, they've had academies there where kids go to school, you know, and they go to school all year round and they pick the best players and they keep them there. They train and all that, and they play competitive games. But one of the things they do is also train their coaches all around the country. They've only got about 60,000 players in their country. Wow, you would have thought that they had millions. And look at the players they're producing. So, you know, sometimes it's good to look at other countries, other programs, to see what they're doing. And the Japanese are doing some great things, so we can learn from others too.
Yeah, and you look at the per capita rates of the Cubans and the Dominicans and the Puerto Ricans that actually make it to MLB. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they have smaller countries, but a large percentage of them are actually making it to major league level.
Well, since we're talking about academies, talking about yours, what are some of the things that you focus with your young players on in the off season, you know, to prepare them for the season?
Just a lot of basic fundamentals. We do stress academics. And this comes from me, not just as a college coach, but as someone who teaches high schoolers. A lot of kids are chasing that college scholarship. But what they don't realize is NCAA Division I baseball only gives out 11.7 Division I scholarships for a 28-30-man roster. So what does that mean? No one really gets a full scholarship. So that means a lot of guys are getting 30, 20, 40% scholarships. So the academic piece becomes a huge factor, Pete, where if you can get, you know, $20,000 for academics and $25,000 for baseball, now most of your education is being paid. So we do start with the classroom. And every coach can tell when they're on the field if that student athlete pays attention in class, because they make eye contact. They kind of process the things you're teaching them on the baseball field. So there is a carryover to the classroom, from the classroom to the baseball field. But then,
go ahead. You're good. Go.
We get into a lot of basic fundamentals. As I mentioned earlier, we do a lot of drills dry without a baseball. Baseball sometimes pollutes the drill and they get too, you know, result oriented. And we sometimes do things with our catchers on blocking or our pitchers on throwing or our hitters with swinging without a baseball. So we're doing a lot of dry stuff before we progress. We'll do a lot of things on our knees so you can isolate different, you know, body parts, whether it be upper or lower body. So we're really mechanically driven in what we do, especially at the young ages.
Hey, what's something as a coach, because we tell all our coaches, I'm sure you have too, you know, you've got to get smarter every day. You've got to think outside the box. Oh, sorry, baseball outside the box. But that's why I started the show, because I want coaches to think outside the box. I want them, you know, when we do our training with coaches around the world, and a shout out to our friends at ISG Baseball, been doing seminars around the world for 30 years. I want coaches, yes, I want them to steal from other coaches good stuff, but I also want them to be creative and think of things, or maybe think of things they can do on their own for players. But if you see a drill, how can I make it better? If you see another drill, how can I incorporate something else? Always get them to think better, to make something better all the time. What's something that you've done in the last couple of years that you've changed, maybe can help some of our coaches?
Yeah, I think, Pete, it starts with being open-minded. I mean, you could be coaching 30, 50, 70 years. If you're not open-minded and you're set in your ways and you're reluctant to change in any industry, you're not going to get better. You know, when I was in Japan with Coach Seiler, he said to me one night over some wonderful sushi we were having, he said, "What percent of the game do you think you know?" He said, "Baseball, do you think you know 30% of baseball?" And he's not talking about the rule book. Just talk holistically, what do I know about baseball? And it was a wonderful question, and I still don't know the answer to it. But what I do know is what makes baseball so unique is that you're always learning. I'm always attending coaching clinics. I'm always reading books. I'm always going on and watching instructional videos. Some are good, some are not so good, but I'm always out there trying to improve my game as a coach. And yes, I'm integrating new drills, so my players, it keeps it fresh with them. I don't want to do the same drills every day. So you learn a new drill or you change the drill. Like I said earlier, I'm now using the Oates throwing sock instead of using the towel drill, just to give you one example.
Is there something that you changed fundamentally, whether it be hitting or pitching in the last 5 years that you said, oh, wow, you know, I was teaching it this way, but, you know, now I made an adjustment because of science, because of technology, or whatever reasons, trial and error, it could be a lot of different things.
Yeah, you know, I think we've gone through, let's just talk about pitching for a moment. I think we've gone through a transformation. I mean, for many years, when I was in college, the coaches always talked about elbow above the shoulder, pause at the balance point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that are now being looked at differently with a lot of video analysis and biomechanical studies. A lot of people like Randy Sullivan at the Florida Baseball Ranch, there's someone who's really broken down the pitching delivery and the Texas Baseball Ranch. And not only the pitching delivery, but hitting as well. So, yeah, we're no longer necessarily saying elbow above the shoulder, but maybe it's more like at shoulder height. We're no longer saying necessarily pause at the balance point, but maybe you're just trying to be athletic through your delivery. So I do think you have to be open-minded and be willing to say, you know what, research suggests otherwise. Not that we're going to throw everything away from the past, but with technology, and as I mentioned earlier, with exit velocities and launch angles, I think you want to integrate all that into your overall framework of coaching, but not necessarily jettison all of those traditional things that you were taught as a kid. I think it has to be a blended approach.
And I love what you said. You said something about you can't forget the past, because there's, on the flip side, there's some really good things that are still good, that what we did in the past still work now. And on top of it, every player is a little different. I mean, you know, now you can't train everybody the same, even though the Japanese have broken that mold. But at the, you know, because there are different ways. The Japanese do it their way. And I've said it on my podcast, because I know I'm changing the subject a little bit. I've said on my podcast, be careful what we tell the Japanese, because when they start learning some of the things that we're picking up, they're going to elevate their game possibly to another level. And that's pretty scary, because their level's pretty good.
Well, you see that at the Little League level. I mean, they gonged us in the Little League World Series Championship, yeah, with 12-2 or something like that. So you're right, they perfected. But I do think you have to be willing to be open-minded. And that's what makes baseball and life fun, learning new things and integrating them and changing your ways rather than doing the same old thing day after day. And I do think technology is something that we have to embrace and not fear. You know, there's going to be a learning curve. So I started using this Diamond Kinetics ball. I had to use it on my phone, and maybe my service wasn't good, and there's frustrations with technology. But once you start using it, you do see the value in it. You know, and those people who are fortunate enough to use HitTrax and Rapsodo, young people, Pete, are totally enwrapped with technology, and they embrace it. And we as older people, you know, not that we're old men yet, but we have to be willing to say, hey, that's going to motivate an 18, 20-year-old, 22-year-old player.
Absolutely. And we all know if you don't change with the times, times will pass you up and you're pretty much going to be done. On top of it, players love to have fun. They love technology, as you mentioned. You know, the technology, I love it. And not only is it good from a learning standpoint, but yeah, you know what? It's also fun. So it adds more entertainment to the actual practice. Practice can be boring. Now it's a little bit more exciting. I was just recently in Russia with Coach Seiler, and you know, they've got all the technology up out in their facilities, and they're learning more. They're having a lot more fun at it. And kids nowadays, you know, that's what we got to make the fun, you know, practice fun. And that's what I want to mention. What some of the things other than technology, what does Coach Gurney do to for the younger kids, especially, to make practice fun a little bit?
Yeah, I think competition is important, building in little competitions with prizes. You know, a lot of coaches, if they don't bring prizes, sure, you can have the losing team, you know, run a lap around the field or do sit-ups or push-ups. But I like to try and bring T-shirts. I'll hang up in a batting cage, Pete. I'll hang up dollar bills in the back of the cage. And if you hit that dollar bill, you get to keep it. I'll hang up a T-shirt. I'll bring sunflower seeds or a pack of Big League Chew. And we give those out as prizes. So I think building in fun little competitions, whether we're doing a sack fly derby or a ground ball competition, you know, Gatorade play of the day for the kid who makes the best defensive play. I think positive reinforcement through prizes really amps up people's level. And we are living in a capitalist society. And let's face it, people are used to incentives, right?
Yeah.
And you can incentivize them with prizes or certain kind of privileges. I think they go after it that much harder.
Love it. I love the dollar one. I'll be over and playing that as soon as this virus is over with. But you're going to have to put up $10 bills for me.
I know you're all about the Benjamins, Pete.
Yeah, the Benjamins. Hey, speaking about Benjamins, this is a great lead-in. I should have asked you earlier when you mentioned college baseball. You're a college coach for many years. I want you to tell our audience, you know, whether it be high school coaches, whether it be our players, especially parents, what's a college coach look for right away in a baseball player? What are the first things that you look for?
Yeah, so traditionally, Major League Baseball and college coaches look at the five tools, right? Power, hitting ability, running speed, fielding, and of course, throwing arm. Those are the five tools. Players tend to get ranked on a 20 to 80 scale. Someone like Mike Trout would be very close to 80 on all of that criteria. But we do look at other things. I mentioned the academic piece before.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's academics, if they're getting 90s in their classes or A's, whatever grading scale you're on, it suggests that they have the ability to focus. They have the ability to be disciplined and have good work habits. So there's the academic piece, and we get transcripts from each of our, you know, candidates. The other thing is there's the hustle component. Every coach loves a kid who's going to sprint out of the box, even on a routine ground ball or pop-up, who's going to dive for a ball. We always love the kid who's going to be the first one at practice and the last one to leave. Hey, coach, can I get an extra 15 ground balls? Hey, can you throw me a few more pitches so I can work on my bunting skills? So that kid who maybe has that extra gear of work ethic. And then last of all, I would categorize something called baseball instincts. When you take a turn running out of the box at first base, does it look like you've played the game? When you're taking a secondary lead at second base, when there's a man on first and you're a pitcher, do you communicate with your shortstop? Hey, come back or I'm going to you. Does it look like you've played the game before? As an outfielder, are you moving on every pitch? I mean, we all know the expression, on every single pitch, all nine players on the field should move. Is that you? Are you taking a creep step as an infielder? Are you backing up the throw from the first baseman to the pitcher as a third baseman? The little nuances. Are you, as a catcher, busting it down the line and backing up that infield ground ball throw? So those are the instinctive things that when I go to a showcase and watch high school kids play, I'm looking at those things. And I'm looking at the hustle. And I'm looking at his transcript. And all those things add up to, do I want this kid to be part of my college program?
Outstanding. And the other thing is, what about, you know, the game's really mental. And, you know, you're going to fail. And two things. One, you see guys, and I was one of them, so I'm not here to criticize anybody. I had a hard time dealing with failure, man. It was tough. Not very good at it. And I had to learn that. That's one. But two, you hear this from college coaches. I hear it a lot. And I'm wondering if you're in the same boat. Kids nowadays, they can't find guys that can compete. You know, that when the tough times come, they get competitive. What do you see in all that?
Yes, you know, some would bring this back to our society. You mentioned Japan, how disciplined and hard-nosed they are. You know, a lot of people criticize Americans because we have this participation trophy society, and everyone's used to getting complimented or a pat on the back, even when they don't perform well at the youth level. And when those youth players get older and they're playing in high school and college and beyond, sometimes they don't have the resiliency and the toughness. I still have a lot of very tough, hard-nosed players, Pete, but all you can do is try to talk to them. We do a lot of off-the-field mental training, listening to TED Talks and other inspirational things. And I also think that's where the physical fitness piece comes in. I think the harder you train, the tougher you get physically, the tougher you're going to be mentally. And when in a 6-5 game, when you strike out with the bases loaded, hopefully the tougher you train in the offseason, both physically and with some of those mental things, the more you're going to be able to bounce back. And in that next at bat, when it's still 6-5, you get that game-winning hit and you don't put your head down.
Hey, Coach, we're coming close to the end of the podcast and the YouTube show, but I want to ask you, some of the mental training, any mental training that you learned from, you know, whether it be, you know, whoever it was, Ken Revisa, you know, rest in peace, one of the greatest, the godfather of mental training. Do you incorporate some of this in your practices?
Yeah, so matter of fact, by the way, one of my guys, JoJo Gray, who's now a Los Angeles Dodgers farmhand, rising star, JoJo put me onto a book called Mind Gym, and I recommend you all pick it up. I had some of my college pitchers actually read it. But let me just tell you a quick Ken Revisa / inner game of tennis peak performance kind of story. So before opening day, I sat our team down in a racquetball court at the college. And we had them close their eyes, me and Coach James Sisko. We had them close their eyes and do some breathing techniques, diaphragmic breathing with the belly and not empty breaths with the chest. And then we had them visualize the team we were playing on opening day, visualize getting three runs in the top of the first. And then we individualized it, Pete. I said, hey, Justin, you're going to make a backhand stab, one hopper at short, and throw the kid out at first base. And I said, Jeremy, you're going to wait on that off-speed pitch on the outside part of the plate and drive it to the opposite field gap. And I said, Jarrett, you're going to throw that 3-2 changeup right on the outside half and freeze the hitter. And sure enough, it was the weirdest thing. We scored four runs in the top of the first, not three. And all three of those baseball individual things occurred in the first five innings.
Wow.
Stuff. So, you know, there's a guy named Harvey Penick, and he wrote a golf book called The Little Red Book, I believe. It's all about taking dead aim. And he said, see it in your mind before you do it. Visualize it happening, and then it will happen. And so we do a lot of that stuff. I'm a big believer in visualization, mental imagery, especially on the day before a game, on the bus ride of the game, players doing it on their beds and closing their eyes and doing a lot of breathing techniques. We also do yoga, Pete. We're big fans of yogas and Pilates. And that also gets into meditation and other forms of training that's not traditional baseball.
Speaking of my yoga, I might go outside the box on that one. I might even start my yoga here down in my basement. In our studio. I got to start that. I keep hearing how good yoga is, so I'm going to have to do it.
You know, please spare me seeing you in those Lululemon stretch pants. You know, I don't know if I can recover from that.
Now we're definitely coming to the end because I don't want to get into any secrets here at all. We got two more things I want to ask you. One, at the end, just so you know, it's a normal thing on our show. We'd love for our coaches to say anything they want to our players or our parents and coaches around the world in the U.S., Any tip that you want to give them in any aspect of the game, whatever you want. Whatever you want to talk about, it's yours at the end. But before the end, what I want to ask is, what does Coach Gurney do on a daily basis to make himself better as a coach, teacher, mentor, and so forth?
Yeah, love
What's your routine?
I love the question. So I need to do exercise every day of the week, Pete. So I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to do my push-ups and crunches. I'm going to do my some kind of cardiovascular workout. Obviously, I'm not going to the gym right now. There's a new machine called Jacob's Ladder that I fell in love with right before this coronavirus hit. And I was going on Jacob's Ladder 20 to 30 minutes. They're even having a competition at my gym. So I was a little deflated when, you know, we had to shut down. So number one, I'm doing cardiovascular. Number two, I'm going to eat healthy every day. And I don't just eat healthy so I live longer. I eat healthy so I feel good. So I'm opening the day with usually oatmeal with some blueberries or strawberries. Maybe I'll sprinkle a little cinnamon on it, put some honey, half a grapefruit. And then lunch, I'm looking to go with some kind of salad with either grilled chicken or grilled salmon. I'm going apple cider vinegar and extra virgin olive oil. You get that as a man from Italy.
Absolutely. I forgot my olive oil. I should have brought it down with my coffee.
And then I'm going to hydrate mostly with water.
I like
my morning coffee, but I'm going to hydrate with water. If I'm drinking anything else, maybe an unsweetened iced tea. But the notion that you got to drink a Gatorade, I'm not a big fan of things that are loaded with salt and sugar unless you're running a marathon or you're really exerting and losing major fluids. And then for dinner, Pete, I'm going to go with a lot of vegetables. Fruits and vegetables with lean meats is the way to live your life. And now let's talk about the brain. So what I'm doing for the brain is a lot of reading. Once again, baseball smarts or any kind. If you're not a reader of paperback books, then, you know, maybe you go on the Kindle or maybe you go on, you know, your Apple device and read a book. Or
yeah, I know you listen to Baseball Outside the Box all the time. So that's another.
Baseball Outside the Box. So I never thought I'd say this, but, you know, Twitter is a wonderful baseball community, and I've connected with so many what I would call baseball geeks and baseball intellectuals on Twitter. I know Instagram has some other stuff, but for me, it's Twitter. And some of the best baseball minds are posting videos and articles. You mentioned Alan Yeager. I mentioned Andy Sullivan. They're all on there. Those are the guys that are great to communicate with.
And there's also some unknowns that I love. I see some people. I just picked up a drill just to give you an example. I remember in the old days when the ball was on the ground, we used to hit our glove on top of it and roll the ball back into our glove, you know, to pick it up. Well, I saw one yesterday, you know, and you think about it, say, okay, he would take the glove and do the same thing, and it would teach him to keep the fingertips of the glove on the ground, and the ball would roll back.
That I've been doing with my guys. So you take the hat off, you put it in your teeth, and you have thrown roll balls to you, and it forces you to get your hands out.
There you go.
You will not be able to see
awesome. Your
hands if you have your if you don't get your hands out, you won't be able to see them. So you put the lid of the cap in your teeth, forces you to get the hands out. I just did that with my college guys in South Carolina. They thought I was crazy. By the end, they're like, Coach, this is an awesome drill. So we can all do that indoors during the coronavirus lockdown.
Absolutely. Love it. All right, man. Let's finish it up with anything that you want to tell the folks in the U.S. and around the world, because our podcast goes all over the world. It's your show. It's no longer Baseball Outside the Box. It's Coach Gurney Outside the Box.
Hey, let's be smart during these difficult times with the coronavirus. Listen, I know it takes discipline. I know you want to see your friends. I know you want to run out into your favorite store or park and play, but you got to be careful. It's not fair to your parents and your grandparents who you might infect, because they won't fight the virus off as well as you can. So number one, be selfless and think about others. And number two, be a student of the game. This is a time, I mean, I watched the Pine Tar game last night, Pete. George Brett, New York Yankees, Pine Tar game. And then I even stayed up till like 12:15. I was so into it. They showed the continuation of the game and the Yankees losing in the bottom of the, I think it was the bottom of the ninth, actually. So you can watch old games on MLB Network, Classic Sports. So be a student of the game. Watch the fundamentals. It's not all about exit velo and launch angle. Get into some of the nitty-gritty from years ago, and you'll have a wonderful time when you're hunkered down if you really love the game. Get into some of the finer aspects of baseball.
All right, Darren, this has been great, man. Fantastic. We're going to have to do this again because we may have a lot more time here. So we'll get a couple more shows in possibly. It's been awesome.
And man, have a great time in Chicago, and I hope to see you in Cuba this summer.
Absolutely. We're still looking at a couple more players, but we're going to wait till this kind of calms down a little bit and then start recruiting some players. So, man, thank you for everything you do for the game of baseball and being a great friend. Thanks for being on the show, buddy.
Likewise, Pete. Great seeing you, pal.
Folks, that is Coach Gurney, rising star. He's also a college baseball coach, Lehman College. Check him out on Twitter, at Coach Gurney. Hey, don't forget, we're going to have everything on the show notes. We'll mention also the books that he mentioned. We'll put those on in the show notes. Don't forget, Baseball Outside the Box. We are at Baseball Out on Twitter. We're all over social media. Now we're on YouTube. Forward the show. You know, yeah, don't forget, clean your hands all the time. I want to wish everybody around the world safe time at home. Relax. Enjoy. Hey, you know, educate yourself a little, but don't be on the TV watching the news all day, because that's going to stress you out a little bit. Educate yourself so you know what to do. But do what Coach Gurney said. Educate yourself in baseball and other things and all kinds of stuff in life. Wash your hands. Be safe. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, from Baseball Outside the Box. He's Coach Gurney. See ya. Sayonara. Ciao. Whatever. Konnichiwa. We'll see ya. Bye-bye.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.